Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
It's a cop that's gonna get you. Gonna look you right in the face.
Better get yourself together, darling.
Join the human race.
Well, I even found myself doing this a couple days ago. I was talking about a troubling situation in my life and how I used to react with anger in a very reactionary way. And then I said, well, you know, given time, I've become more zen about it. And most people would understand what I mean is I've kind of come to terms with it, come at peace with it, and I don't react with such vigor anymore to this problem in my life. More zen. It's a popularization of a rather weighty concept in Buddhism, and I'm no Buddhist, not by a long shot. We look at the celebrities who at least call themselves Buddhist. Is this Buddhism that we're looking at? What is real Buddhism, and how does it contrast with Christianity? Dr. Harold Netland joins us for the next 10 minutes of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, July the 2nd. He's professor of philosophy of religion and intercultural studies at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. He's co-author of the new book, Buddhism, A Christian Exploration and Apprisal. Dr. Netland, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
Richard Gere, famous actor, claims to be a Buddhist. When we see what he believes and practices, are we looking at authentic Buddhism there?
Well, I can't comment on Richard Gere himself so much, but more generally about the kind of Buddhism you find in the United States and parts of Europe. You have to distinguish between the immigrant Buddhism, largely Chinese, Korean, Japanese immigrant communities that practice Buddhism, and the convert Buddhism. And much of that tends to differ quite a bit from what you find in Asia and certainly back in India where Buddhism originated.
If you were to, we could talk about the heart of Christian doctrine being man's sin and God's mercy in Jesus Christ and his saving work culminating at the cross and the resurrection as the heart of Christian doctrine. If we were to find the heart of Buddhist doctrine, how would we explain it?
Right. And again, I will speak primarily about classical Buddhism as it developed in India, China, Korea, and Japan. And I think that is different from what you find in much of Western American Buddhism. But two things right away. You defined the heart of the Christian gospel in terms of God and then sin. In Buddhism, classical Buddhism, there is no God, and therefore there is no concept of sin. So you're already in a very, very different context. The heart of Buddhism classically has been the message that you can overcome suffering by practicing certain meditative techniques, attaining a certain state of enlightenment, and thereby breaking the causal chain that keeps us coming back again and again and again in repeated rebirths. So that's classically the heart of Buddhism. And then as it went through China and Japan, and then as it's come to the United States, it's taken on a lot of other things. But essentially, the message of the Buddha was all of existence is characterized by suffering. You can identify the causes of suffering, and if you eliminate those causes, then you eliminate suffering. And when you do that, you also eliminate the continual cycle of rebirths, and that was the ultimate goal.
The view of the universe as driven, essentially driven by karma, this law of cause, as you have said, seems, some people would say, well, that's a pretty, that's not too far from Christianity. What goes around comes around, people get what they deserve. What's the difference here between the Buddhist view of karma and the Christian view of, I guess you could say, divine justice?
Right. Well, sometimes the doctrine of karma is simply explained as, well, you know, actions have consequences. If you do this, you're going to have to pay the price of that. And everybody believes that. We do certain actions, and there are certain consequences that are going to follow from that. Classically, in India, where Buddhism originates with Hinduism and Jainism as well, karma is an all-encompassing metaphysical principle, so that everything about my condition now, immediately, is the result of not only previous actions in this life, but previous actions and dispositions in a whole series of previous lives. And it is deterministic. Now, many Buddhists and Hindus will argue that it's not deterministic. It's pretty hard for me to see how you avoid determinism in that framework. It's just a basic principle, kind of like the law of gravity. It's just there, and everything operates according to that.
They talk in terms of four truths, or four noble truths.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Right. This goes back supposedly to the first sermon that the Buddha taught after his enlightenment, and there's a very logical sequence. The first one simply says all existence is characterized by suffering. And suffering here doesn't mean that there's no pleasure in life or we don't enjoy anything, but it means that even at the very height of pleasure, even the most positive experiences are characterized by impermanence. We know that this is going to end, and then we're going to be left wanting more. So there's this kind of dissatisfaction that you just can't get away from. So the first truth is simply all existence is suffering. Second, the suffering is caused by desire or craving. And it's not desiring the wrong things, it's desire itself, which can never be satiated. The third truth then is when you cease craving or desire, then suffering ceases as well. And then the fourth truth shows you how to eliminate desire or craving, and you do that by following the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's the heart of the Buddha's early teaching. Buddhism, as it developed into China and Japan, became very, very metaphysically elaborate, and there are all kinds of other teachings that have come in as well. But classically, the four truths are right at the heart of the Buddha's teaching.
What is the state of enlightenment? As I looked at Buddhism, you know, you first expect it to be enlightenment in kind of the classical Western sense, knowledge. But it sounds as though the thoroughgoing Buddhist doesn't desire knowledge or even improvement or a better knowledge of oneself. But I don't know a better word to use than selflessness, loss of self.
Okay. Loss of self, you're referring to their teaching about no self. And again, the early teaching of the Buddha, the classical teaching, is there is no soul. There is no enduring substantial self or person or soul that passes from one life to another. And then the question becomes, well, what is it that is reborn then if it's not a soul? And they have an elaborate answer, but it essentially boils down to it's the karmic effects of actions in this life that then carry over into the next life. But enlightenment itself, again, I've not experienced Buddhist enlightenment, so I simply go by what they say. But it is a state of understanding that transcends the ordinary everyday life discursive reasoning process. And with enlightenment, you understand the causes of suffering and how to eliminate suffering. And supposedly, many, many people have attained enlightenment since Gautama, and the enlightenment that they attain is said to be the same kind of experience that Gautama himself experienced.
What role does Jesus play in the mind of, I guess you couldn't say the classical Buddhism, but by the time it becomes in contact with the West, how did they incorporate a teaching of Jesus or an acknowledgement of Jesus into their way of thinking about the world with about a minute and a half here?
Okay. Classical Buddhism has nothing to say about Jesus, and throughout Asian Buddhism, there really has been no interest in the person of Jesus. In the West, there is obviously fascination. The Dalai Lama has a whole book where he discusses his views of Jesus. And typically, Jesus is made to be another bodhisattva, a Buddha of compassion, or a supremely enlightened figure. So they try to bring Jesus into the Buddhist framework and interpret him as an enlightened being, much like the Buddha.
Then with 30 seconds, someone might suppose, well, you know, I can be a Christian and a Buddhist at the same time. There are even some who profess to be Christians and to be Zen Christians. If we understand Buddhism thoroughly, if we understand Christianity as it is presented to us in God's Word, is such a thing truly possible?
My short answer is no. I don't think that's fair to Buddhism, and I don't think it's fair to the New Testament gospel. I think Buddhism classically is atheistic, and I think it's like oil and water, trying to mix the two.
Well, the briefest of introductions to Buddhism, Dr. Harold Netland is professor of philosophy of religion and intercultural studies at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and he's co-author of the new book, Buddhism, A Christian Exploration and Appraisal. You can purchase this book, Buddhism, A Christian Exploration and Appraisal, under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org. Look for the book, Buddhism, A Christian Exploration and Appraisal. Dr. Netland, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you so much, Todd. My pleasure.
When we come back from this break, the last 10 minutes of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, July the 2nd, we'll spend with Dr. Peter Scare. The church remembers on this day what's called the Visitation. Simple. Mary, the mother of our Lord, visits the mother of John the Baptist, Elizabeth, and a song ensues. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest on the other side of this break. I'm Todd Wilkin.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org. And click on-demand audio.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Getting the message straight, getting the message out. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.